Advisement. Court will proceed to the fourth case, In Re Hazlett. Mr. Meacham.
May it please the court. My name is Bruce Meacham, attorney for Hazlett Judy Oil Incorporated, which is the debtor in the Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceeding that from which this dispute arises. The debtor operates a bulk petroleum delivery business. The principal issue in this appeal is whether Illinois motor fuel tax is conceptually a different tax than Illinois use tax, which this court in the Rosenau and Grotkin cases classified as a trust fund tax under what is now Section 507A8C of the Bankruptcy Code. There are no reported decisions on the question of how Illinois motor fuel tax is classified under Section 507A8 of the Bankruptcy Code. The debtor contends that motor fuel tax is different in concept from use tax, while Illinois Department of Revenue contends that the two taxes are conceptually the same. The Department of Revenue bases its argument on the language of Section 6 of the Illinois Motor Fuel Tax Law, which is excerpted in Appellee's brief. Notwithstanding that statutory language, there are four factors which are discussed at length in appellant's brief that undermine the Department of Revenue's attempt to use that statutory language to equate motor fuel tax to a trust fund tax. It's the appellant's contention that motor fuel tax and use tax, which Rosenau and Grotkin addressed, are different in concept because the two taxes are assessed differently. Motor fuel tax is assessed upon the amount of gallons of fuel that pass through a distributor's inventory during a month. Use tax or sales tax is assessed upon the amount of a retailer's gross receipts during the month. That difference in assessment is clearly evident in the return forms for each of those taxes, which are contained in the separate appendix to appellant's brief. That difference is also evident in the language of Section 2B of the Motor Fuel Tax Law, 35 ILCS 505/2B, which states that motor fuel tax is calculated on the basis of fuel gallonage, and the text of the Motor Fuel Tax Act is also contained in the appellant's brief. I also note that Section 8 of the Illinois Use Tax Act, 35 ILCS 105/8, which is cited in Appellee's brief, contains express language which was added by the Illinois legislature in 1999, stating that the tax which a retailer has actually collected, quote, is held in trust for the benefit of, end quote, the Department of Revenue. There is no comparable language in any section of the motor fuel tax law, and the Department of Revenue concedes that on page 22 of its brief. The only issue that was decided in the Rosenau case was that Illinois use tax owed by a retail merchant is classified as a trust fund tax under present subsection C of Bankruptcy Code Section 507A8. The only issue that was decided in the Grotkin case was that a claim in bankruptcy for sales tax only, rather than for both sales tax and use tax, does not qualify as a trust fund tax under subsection C. The secondary issue in this appeal is whether the debtor's plan of reorganization, which admittedly does not prescribe an interest rate on the deferred payments on the portion of the Department of Revenue's claim that is classified in that plan as priority, whether that complies with one of the requirements for confirmation that appear in Bankruptcy Code Section 1129A9C and with this court's decision in the Burgess Wholesale case. The Burgess decision requires that when a plan of reorganization provides for payment of priority taxes over time, the value of the payments that are made over time must equal the value of the priority tax claim at the time when the plan becomes effective. The Burgess decision declined to discuss an appropriate discount or interest rate. As noted in page 19 of appellant's brief, there's a $3,500 differential between the amount that the Department of Revenue would receive in installment payments over time, as proposed in the plan, and the amount of the claim that's classified as priority based on the contention that's the principal issue in this case resolves around.
If I could, counsel, go back to the primary issue in this case. Okay. Is it really true that there is no case law anywhere in the country on this issue? I mean, gas taxes are ubiquitous, and I would think that this would have come up before now.
Well, I'm not aware of any case where it has come up from the standpoint of dealing with Illinois motor fuel tax.
Right, but I mean,
I can't really respond to
every state has gas taxes, and so I would have thought this would have come up someplace where the construction of this particular section of the bankruptcy code would have been an issue, but apparently not.
Hmm? Yeah, well, to be honest, I don't know if possibly comparable taxes in other states have come up before another federal appeals court, but at least the Illinois motor fuel tax law, and I believe that Appley will concede this also. There's no reported decision dealing with how that relates to Section 507A8.
In the Rosenau case, this court said that a tax falls within Section C if, one, it is required to be collected or withheld, and, two, the debtor is liable for it in whatever capacity, which is basically a paraphrase of the statute. How is it that this tax doesn't meet that definition? It's a tax that's required to be collected or withheld. Yeah. At the time of sale, right? And the debtor is liable to pay it over to the state pursuant to
that twofold test
formula
from
having to do with
is
the
law. I agree with that. I don't think that this tax, motor fuel tax, quite falls within that two-part test because it's really assessed on the amount of gallons that run through the inventory. It's not something that's assessed on the customer, and the customer pays, and then it's passed on. I think it's a minor difference, but I think it is the difference in this case.
But isn't it true that the tax is assessed on the number of gallons that the consumer pumps? I mean, it's a certain number of cents per gallon, right?
Well, it's assessed on the amount of gallons that the distributor takes in every month.
Okay, and because this is a wholesaler, right?
Yeah, it's assessed on the wholesaler. And the tax return starts out one line, says amount of gallons came in during the month, and then there's a few other deductions, basically amount of gallons sold, amount of gallons exempt, and then the tax is assessed on the net gallonage on the bottom line. That's very different than the use or sales tax return, which very clearly is sales receipts, gross receipts, minus exemptions, that receipts the tax is paid on. And I think those two returns, because they're very different, plus the language in Section 2B of the Motor Fuel Tax Code, I think that's what makes the motor fuel tax conceptually different than the use or the sales tax. And I certainly acknowledge the two-part test in Rosenau. That is the definition. But I think the way the tax is treated in the return forms that the Department of Revenue prescribes takes it outside of Rosenau. Finally, getting back to the secondary issue, there is a $3,500 differential between the amount that is proposed to be paid to the Department of Revenue in payments over time and the base amount of those taxes, which the debtor contends qualifies as priority. Even though the debtor's plan does not prescribe an interest rate, that $3,500 differential amounts to about a 5% return, and it's my contention that falls within the confines of Bankruptcy Code Section 1129A9C and the court's ruling in the Burgess Wholesale case. Other than that, I'll stand on my brief. I don't know if the court has any other questions.
Thank you, Mr. Meek.
Thank you.
Mr.
Good morning, Your Honors, Counselor. May it please the Court. My name is Illinois Assistant Attorney General Carl Elitz, appearing on behalf of the Department of Revenue. I really have one essential point to make, and I think the mistake that my opponent makes in his brief is a fairly straightforward one. Section 507A8 is two subparts that are relevant, Part C and Part E. He again and again argues that the motor fuel tax, the Illinois motor fuel tax, falls under Part E, and I don't think I have any contention with that. I think that's probably correct. The point, though, is that it also falls under subsection C. And if it falls under subsection C, we know from Rose now that when a tax falls under both sections, that subsection C's provisions may mean that the debt can't be discharged in bankruptcy. Now, does this tax fall under subsection C? That should be a very straightforward question for the court, because the tax is both required to be collected or withheld, and Section 6 of the Illinois Motor Fuel Tax Act requires that, and it's also required to be turned over to the department and held by the seller of the motor fuel. So in that, the fuel here is uncontrovertibly fuel that falls within under Section C. There should be no problem here concluding the district court was correct and that this debt was not dischargeable. Now, it is certainly true that the motor fuel tax is different than the use tax in Illinois, but that's really not the point of Rose now. Rose now is just there for me to argue that those two sections are not mutually exclusive. Judge Sykes, I don't come across any cases in other states, and I'm sure I looked, but I'm sure it's been a while now. But as my opponent says, there are these cases in Illinois that I think should control the day for this court. The other case, Groakin, which is the other case that we're going back and forth on, is an occupational sales tax, an Illinois occupational sales tax. And the court there explains the difference between a tax that is imposed on on the seller and a tax that is imposed on the seller, but only that is collected from the seller, but is actually imposed on the ultimate user of the fuel. And the motor fuel tax is a tax that's imposed on the ultimate user of the fuel, unlike the occupational sales tax. That's been the case, to my surprise, it's been the case in Illinois since the 20s or 30s. So motor fuel taxes go back a long way. Section 2 of the Motor Fuel Tax Act makes it very clear that the tax is imposed ultimately on the user of the fuel on the highways. And so it's collected in the chain of supply, but the tax is actually imposed as an instance of tax on the motorist. And so for that reason, this is different than the occupational tax that was at issue at Groakin. To turn to the second issue about the interest rate, the problem with the argument that there's a $3,500 overpayment here and that represents interest is that if the department doesn't have a specific rate of interest in the plan of reorganization, then we won't know what happened. Then we are potentially be deprived of interest if the debtor doesn't actually make his payments. So it would be 5% if the debtor were to make his payments, but if the debtor were to not make his payments and take substantially longer, that interest rate could eventually move towards zero, and then we would not be getting the interest that the Burgess Wholesale case suggests that the department is entitled to receive. I don't really have much more than that. Unless there are questions, I'll stand on my brief.
Thank you, Mr. Reilly.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Manchin.
I did not reserve rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you to both counsel. The case is taken.